evening, good afternoon, good morning. This is Tom Harris at Tom Harris USA, episode number 30. You know, it seems like episode 30 should be something special, sort of a milestone episode with, you know, this round number and all. But truth to tell, I really don't have any agenda for the show. And it's funny because I've just spent a great deal of time working on the last 4 or 5 episodes, dealing with creationism and Noah and just doing all this research and looking up stuff. It's been a long time since I've actually had a chance to just do kind of a casual show and not really discuss anything in particular. Now, last show was almost like this one, I guess, talking about market days and so forth. I do have a mail to read, and I will get to that in due course. Incidentally, if you hear some noise in the background, like a rushing noise, something like that, it's because I have the fan on today. Normally, I would shut that off while I'm recording because I don't like to have that noise in the background all the time. Well, this time I have the fan on, so there might be some noise. Never mind it. It's just the fan. It's just keeping things bearable in here. The weather in Chicago for the last 3 or 4 days has been in the 90s. And very, very humid. Just very unpleasant weather. It's the sort of weather that I left Florida to get away from. Now, of course, the big difference is that, you know, we have this weather for maybe 3 weeks out of the year, usually in August and maybe sometimes into September. Whereas in Florida, you have this nasty weather all year round, except for, you know, maybe 3 weeks in the winter. So I would much rather have this weather for 3 weeks than have it be all year round like it is in Florida. But we do have, of course, to deal with the snow and the ice and things like that in the winter. But I would rather deal with that than actually be hot all year long. I know there's a lot of people who would disagree. I think if I ever moved somewhere warm, it would have to be somewhere like Southern California or Arizona where it's hot, but it's a drier heat and not so bad. But, you know, back in Florida, I had all sorts of sinus problems and allergies and stuff, which I don't have up here. Get a little bit of it during the summer. Overall, I much prefer the climate here. I'm really looking forward to getting over to England. Ross was complaining. Ross Patzelt, by the way, it's you can listen to his podcast. It's www.rosspatzelt.co.uk. Ross was complaining because he said it's really hot and humid. But I've been keeping track of the weather in the UK, and it looks to me like it's been, you know, kind of nice, actually. I've been in the 70s and, you know, maybe a little humid, but not too bad. I mean, that's like nice weather compared to what I'm having right now in Chicago. But anyhow, I'm really looking forward to the trip. This is something that, you know, I've really starting to get very excited about now. Today, I'm recording the show on Monday, and it's going to be posted tomorrow. And I may or may not do another show to post on Thursday. I really haven't decided. If I do, it'll be a little short one. And it won't be the usual half-hour show. But I am leaving on Friday afternoon, to go to the UK. And the way it has shaped up is I'm flying out of here Friday at 6 p.m., be arriving in London at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. So I arrive at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. At 9 a.m. Saturday morning, my best friend will arrive. So I'm going to stick around the airport until he lands, and then we'll ride into London together. We'll either take the tube or take a taxi or something. And we have a B&B booked in London. We'll be in London for the weekend. I may have already gone over this, but just in case people haven't listened to the show, then, you know, I'll just go over it again. So we're spending the weekend in a B&B in the center of London. I don't know where, but it is kind of right in the middle of everything. And it wasn't very expensive. As a matter of fact, I think we've really gotten off easy on this trip. I'm paying, Paul went ahead and made the arrangements. I mentioned this in a previous show. Paul is leaving nothing to chance. He doesn't want to risk not having a place to stay or whatever, which I guess is understandable. And he's booked all of our accommodation up until we get to Carlisle, after which we're going to separate, and he's going to go back to London, and I'm going to go off to Gloucester and the Cotswolds. But he's booked everything. You'll never guess how much I'm paying for accommodation for that entire week and a half. Go ahead, guess. You say £300, £200? Nope. £140. That's really good. We are talking double occupancy here, but I think that is a really, really good price. And, you know, £140 is less than, well, it's less than $300. And I think that's a darn good price. I don't think I could do that in the States. So, yeah, good for us. we did kind of get all the kinks out of the accommodation. Now, I still need to find accommodation in Gloucester. I haven't really started doing that yet. And I'll probably start doing that when I actually get over there. I'll go online, or I'll go to the tourist office or something and see what I can find. I don't want to stay in any of these posh places, you know? It's not really worth it for a bed and breakfast. Because most of the mom and pop type bed and breakfasts are just fine. Never had any trouble with them. There was one kind of dodgy one I stayed in years and years and years ago. This would have been 1996. And I went to Southampton to go to a meetup of the Gay UK IRC channel. And this was, a long, long time ago now. And I just happened to be there on a bad weekend. And I had to stay in this place that was, it was pretty dreadful, really. It was probably the worst B&B I've ever stayed in. And the owner was this guy who wasn't a very good housekeeper, and the breakfast was kind of crap. And they were telling everybody, you know, don't go outside after a certain time of night, because I guess the part of town was right over in, if you know Southampton at all, dreadful place. Don't have good memories of Southampton. But the B&B was right over by the football grounds. And it just happened that night there was a game, and Manchester United was playing there. And they warned us, if they lose, we would have to stay off the streets because there would be hooligans running around beating people up and such. Well, as it happened, Manchester United won, and it didn't turn out to be a problem. But I went to this meetup at a pub, and I don't remember the name of the pub anymore. It's been way, way, way too long. But went up to this pub, and there was a meetup of the Gay UK channel, and there was members of Gay London and Gay UK there. I could have sworn, now, it could be that I've got a very bad memory, but I could have sworn that Chris Reardon was one of those people at that thing. But I don't know. It's been, you know, I asked Chris about it, but he didn't remember. So, you know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But the travel thing, yeah, I'm getting excited about it. I've pretty much already packed. I've got all the essentials taken care of. Everything is paid for at this point. So it's just a matter of going along for the ride. I still don't know if I'm going to have a job when I come back or not. I was hoping that I would find out something today being Monday, and Friday is the day I'm leaving. But they haven't said anything to me at all. So I'm assuming that if I don't hear anything certainly by Wednesday, that I will probably still have a job when I come back. But you never know. Because like I said at the previous show, I'm training my own successor right now. Anyhow, I've had a lot of messages from people on Facebook, and they're saying, oh, you're so lucky, you're getting to travel. You know, there's no luck involved in this, folks. It's just a matter of planning it out and kind of doing it, you know, thoughtfully. It doesn't take any big luck to go overseas. And maybe people in America, they don't travel as much overseas. And I know there's a lot of Americans who are afraid to travel overseas. They're worried that they're going to be hated. They're worried that they're not going to be able to make themselves understood. I always find it funny when people are worried about crime. because, you know, Europe certainly and most of the rest of the world, actually the crime is quite comparable or lower than crime in the States. Certainly it's lower than, you know, for example, in the UK, if there's a murder in the UK, it makes the front page of the national news. In America, it quite often doesn't make the paper at all. So there's, you know, violent crime as a rule is much lower in the UK, or in Europe indeed. But you have to worry more, a little bit more maybe about pickpockets and that sort of thing overseas than you do here. That's a less common crime here. Here they would just mug you. And there they'd more likely to be stealthy about it as not to get caught, you know. But things are changing, of course. And I think that, unfortunately, I think there is more violent crime now than there used to be in the UK and perhaps in other parts of Europe as well. But I think it's still below what we would experience here in the big city. So I'm not very worried about it. And I do recommend to people that you get one of those money pouches or money belts. And I'm a big hypocrite because I don't always carry one myself. But that is one of the, you know, that is the advice that I would normally give people when they travel overseas. But like I was saying, it doesn't take, you know, luck to go overseas. It just takes planning. And if you shop around, you can find a good airfare. And you don't need to pay thousands of dollars to travel overseas. You can travel overseas pretty cheaply. In 1996, I spent 8 months in Europe, and I spent less than $50 a day, 50 American dollars a day. Now, adjusted for inflation and for the exchange rate difference and so forth, that would be about $80 today. And that's not a lot of money. And I was able to, for example, when I was in London, I was able to work at the hostel a little bit and get a free bed that way. That freed me up to, you know, sightsee all day, except for between, you know, 8 in the morning and 10. You know, just a couple hours a day that I spent vacuuming and helping with the breakfast and so forth. I mean, and it's quite under the table, of course, but at the same time, you're actually meeting people, and I don't really want to stay in hostels anymore. And part of that is being older and having a little bit more care about privacy, but most of that now is the fact that I snore. And I've been in a situation now where I've been inconvenienced by other people snoring, so I don't want to put other people through it. So normally I stay in bed and breakfast when I'm in the UK. I haven't traveled in mainland Europe for a while. It's been about 9 years since the last time I was in mainland Europe. But even then, I was staying more in pensions or, you know, the hostels where you had your own room, that sort of thing. And, you know, I will say, if you've never traveled abroad before, you know, there are a few tips that I would offer you. Now, if you want to travel cheaply, your cheapest option, of course, is camping. And that is going to be also, logistically, you have to make more effort to do that, because you have to have gear with you, you have to have a tent, you have to have a sleeping bag and all that. But if you are, especially if you're younger and you're a little more adventurous, I definitely would recommend going and staying in hostels. They're not dangerous. You do have to watch your valuables, and my first advice, of course, other than wearing a money belt, you know, sort of common sense stuff, is just don't take valuables with you. Don't take jewelry with you. Don't take expensive watches or, you know, expensive cameras with you. Take just what you can carry as far as valuables go. And I imagine, you know, people who are out sightseeing, they're going to have their camera with them. They're going to have their passport with them. I don't trust luggage rooms. Lockers, yes, as long as they have a lock on it, I don't have any trouble with. Most people who stay in hostels are going to be honest. They're not going to be rooting through your bags, but the possibility does exist. And in my experience, now I had traveler's check stolen while I was staying in a youth hostel, and the hostel in question happened to be in Bath, and I didn't know it. They were very good. I didn't think that my bag had been disturbed at all. But apparently what had happened was somebody did go in while I was, you know, off in the shower or something, went through my bag, removed a few traveler's checks, and went to the American Express office and cashed them. You know, which is ridiculous because they're supposed to get a signature, they're supposed to have check your ID and all this stuff. And since then, I will not buy American Express traveler's checks because the first thing they did was they tried to blame me for having the check stolen. The first thing they did was accuse me of spending them. But I was able to prove to them, well, when this was spent, I wasn't there. I wasn't in this part of, you know, because I had cashed them here at the same day. And eventually they ended up giving me my money back. But it took, it was so much trouble that I just have not bothered with traveler's checks since. And I never will get traveler's checks again. You don't need them anymore. That's the one thing, is that, you know, you don't want to carry large amounts of cash on you. But you can use your American ATM card most places in Europe now. Now, when I was in Japan, I did find that it was a little bit more difficult to use your ATM card there because most of the ATMs in Japan are Japanese banks only. You do occasionally in the larger cities find one that you can use your card at. But you know, Japan is a cash and carry society. They don't like traveler's checks. They don't like credit cards. They want, you know, cash in yen. Nobody is going to take American dollars. Getting way off the subject, of course. But, you know, so keeping your valuables safe, you know, first of all, don't take valuables. And second of all, don't carry large amounts of cash on you. The other thing, of course, is, you know, just use common sense. It's probably safer in Europe than it would be in a large city in the States. The other thing is, though, is that, you know, getting a passport isn't hard, and it's not that expensive. It's, you know, it cost me $60 to renew my passport. It's you know, if you're getting a new passport, it's a little bit more expensive. I think it's $75 or $80 to get a new one. Obviously, once you have it, if you're over 18, it's good for 10 years. So it's really not expensive if you spread it out. And people tend to be so intimidated when they're traveling abroad for the first time. You know, the thing is, of course, to remember is that, you know, when you're traveling, A, you want to keep yourself safe. Don't do anything that you wouldn't do at home. Don't take any unnecessary risks. You know, if you do have valuables, you know, keep them somewhere where you can lock them with a padlock. Take a padlock with you. Of course, you can't lock your luggage that way, so you'll have to save the lock for if you have a locker, or once you're done flying, you can lock your luggage. But I don't trust places like luggage rooms because anybody can walk in there. I've been in that situation where it's like, ooh, this is a little bit too open for me. I'm going to go to the train station. Train stations quite often will have lockers that you can rent, and they're not usually all that expensive. And especially if you're in a town for only one day, or, you know, if you just have an afternoon to sightsee and you're on the stop, traveling around Europe is very easy. And trains have become too expensive now. I as much as I hate to admit it, I used to travel everywhere by train. Now, if you get a Eurail pass, which you can't buy in Europe. You have to buy it in the States before you go. You can buy your rail pass, and your rail pass gives you first class train travel anywhere in their area. And their area is somewhat limited, but it's, you know, especially if you're going for the first time, you can go pretty much anywhere, you know, big that you'd want to see. And that's actually kind of your best deal. Going point to point has become very expensive, and we found that it has got kind of gradually gotten more expensive. But the network is actually very good in Europe, even in the UK. The one European country I found that the rail system wasn't really good was in Ireland. And that's because they've actually eliminated most of the rail routes in Ireland over the years, and you know, people are driving more. And it's a small island, so I guess I don't know if they really felt the need to have an extensive rail network anymore. So I didn't actually travel by train there. The way to get around Ireland is by bus, and the buses are quite reasonable. And I think you can also find that in the UK, because as train travel becomes more expensive, the cheaper it's going to be. Now, I just got a BritRail pass, and it's a BritRail England pass, so I can't travel outside of England with it. But that's okay, because we're not going outside of England on this trip. We're going from London to Newcastle on that Tuesday, and then we're going to walk the Hadrian's Wall path over the next six days, and end up in Carlisle, which is kind of right. It's on the borders, and then take a train from Carlisle down to Gloucester, and probably I'll have to change in Birmingham. But I think everybody should travel. That's something that I firmly believe. I think that the best way to develop an understanding of other cultures is to travel. You would be amazed at how much ignorance there is of other cultures. And a lot of it is because people in this country, you know, only a tiny percentage of the U.S. population, I forget what it is, it's something like 3% or something, have a passport. That's insane. You know, and we don't usually travel in this country in the same way that they do in Europe. In Europe, of course, it's more compact, and you know, it's easier to do there because you don't have to travel over the ocean. You know, you just travel. If you're in Britain, you go over the Channel, you go to France, you know, to go to Calais to go to the duty free shops or whatever. If you're in Finland, you go to Viborg in Russia for a few hours. You know, and or you go to, you know, to across to Sweden, you know, a 12-hour boat ride from Helsinki to Stockholm. So I really firmly believe that people should travel and see as much of the world as they can, and it's best to do that when you're young. Because when you get older and you know you get fatter and you get lazier and you you feel like you want more comfort. And I hate to say it, you know, I used to love the hosteling thing, but now I've kind of stopped wanting to do that. Now I want to stay at a nice B&B and have a little bit more creature comforts and have my own room, or, you know, at least share it with somebody who doesn't mind me snoring. The other thing, and this is a big one, and if anybody is traveling, please, if you're an American, please don't be the ugly American. That is the most annoying thing in the world, and it's so embarrassing for those of us who are actually trying to be a good example of our populace. I met this kid, and I call him a kid because he was younger than I was at the time. At the time, I was 26, and he would have been about 19, 18, somewhere around there. And we were in, I think it was Copenhagen, Denmark. In the sleep inn, and if, I don't know if that still exists, but at that time it did, and it was this huge, sprawling, sort of hostel thing. And this kid was so obnoxious. His whole thing was, "I'm an American, and my grandfather fought in World War II to rescue you people from the Nazis, so you should worship me as a god." And he got really, really rude with those people. And you could tell that they were very, very annoyed with him. And he was giving a really bad example. And after he kind of would go away, people would start apologizing for this kid. It's like, you know, seriously, you know, we're not all like that. So the important thing when you go overseas, don't be like that. Be polite. You know, you are a guest in their country, so you want to be a good guest. The other thing is try to avoid the stereotypes. A lot of places have stereotypes. One of the notorious ones here in the States are the French. People love to take the piss out of the French here. They like to talk about how rude the French people are, etc. Now, I haven't found that to be true at all. I've spent some time in France. Now, I've only spent time in Paris, which is arguably the rudest part of France. And I've only run into one rude French person in my whole experience of France. one rude French person, and he was the guy who had to deal with tourists all day. So in a way, you kind of can't blame him, but that was the guy who drives the bus between Gare du Nord train station and Charles de Gaulle Airport. My experience was I didn't know if that was the right bus, and I went up to the bus and I tried to speak French, because that's all, they always appreciate it when you try, and if you stink at it, don't worry about it, they'll speak English to you. Everyone in France does speak English, but they just would prefer that you speak in their own language, just as you would expect a tourist coming to this country to speak in English. Anyway, I went up and I said, excusez-moi, s'il vous plaît, this is the autobus zum Charles de Gaulle. I don't speak French, but I gave it a go. And he was kind of snotty, as a no speak English. I am French. No, he didn't say that. But no, he was very rude and like no speak English. And which is kind of odd because the word bus and the word airport are the same in English and French. So I can truthfully say that I've met one rude French person. The rudest tourists I ran into, other than Americans tended to be, I don't think, as rude as the German and French tourists that I ran into in general. But Americans really do have very demanding, they're very demanding as tourists. They want everything just the way it is at home. They complain a lot. They're very loud. I found the same goes for the Germans and the French, especially in Eastern Europe. I found the Germans in Eastern Europe were kind of obnoxious as well. And there weren't very many Americans over there when I was there. I was in Eastern Europe in 96 and in 99. And there really weren't very many American tourists in the parts of Eastern Europe I was in at the time. Part of that had to do with the fact that they had just gotten done fighting a civil war in Croatia and Slovenia, when they fought to separate themselves from the former Yugoslavia. And I was only there a couple of years after the fighting stopped. And I was in Croatia and Slovenia and Hungary. We did kind of pass through Bosnia. And there weren't very many Americans at all there. It was mostly German tourists and Italian tourists. So, but it is interesting, and that's why I say, if you're going to travel overseas, and I think everybody should, don't be the ugly American. And I think that's just common sense. I think you're going to have a better time if you get along with people and do it and Just be nice to be around, because people aren't actually against you as a tourist, but if you act rudely, they're not going to be nice to you in return. But it's always good to try to understand the culture of the country you're in and try to experience the culture of the country you're in as authentically as possible. Now, that isn't necessarily very authentically if you're a tourist, but I would try to avoid the tourist hangouts. If you're in Paris, of course, especially if it's your first time there, by all means, go to the Louvre and to the Eiffel Tower, etc. But the charm of Europe and what's interesting about Europe is actually experiencing the real Europe. And I don't think you're going to find that in the major tourist spots. It's good to get off the beaten path and get away from the big population centers and go off. But, I had an email I was going to read, and I just realized I'm not going to have time to read that now. Somehow I've managed to fill up this entire show of babblings on travel. Anyhow, I guess I'll save this till next time, so I will read it out if I do another little show before I leave. And if you want to send mail to the show, please feel free. I always like mail. It gives me material. And the email address of the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always like to hear from my listeners. Anyway, it's time to go. So if I don't see you, then have a great 2 weeks. I'll be back on the 30th of August, and I'll probably try to have a show up on the 1st. Anyway, this is Tom at Tom Harris USA, signing off. See you next time.